At the end of yesterday's Shir Shmuel, we started talking about the Iser Hanah from Mukta. And I looked this over again, and I came to the conclusion that what we said yesterday was not 100% accurate. And I'd like to correct what I said yesterday. Now this all comes down to a girsa here in our sugya of the Beis Yosef in Rashi, and that's going to be on Daf Kuf Chav Hey Amid Beis. And the discussion was about a pile of stones, and the issue was whether you're allowed to sit on these stones on Shabbos. And if you remember, the Gemara records that Rebbe told his Talmidim to Uve Chishvu that they should go out and prepare or designate the stones on Erev Shabbos for yeshiva, for purposes of sitting. And the Gemara has a machlokes exactly what Rebbe told his Talmidim. Did he tell them to restructure the stones and place them in a way that it would be comfortable for sitting? Or perhaps you don't need a maisa, you don't need such a profound action to change the structure of the stones. Perhaps it's enough that you just designate it for sitting, or perhaps just to wipe off the top of the stones to flatten them out. You remember, because there was sort of pieces of cement maybe that would disturb him. And that, the Gemara says, turns out to be a machlokes between Rabbi Ami and Rav Asi. And Rav Ami requires, in his interpretation of what Rabbi told the Talmidim, tzu'u v'limdum, which means that you have to actually restructure them. And it was Rav Asi who had a more lenient view, if you recall, and he said just wipe them off on top. Tzu'u v'shifshifu. And what we were focused on is Rashi Dibra Maskil Tzu'u v'limdum, which would be the shita of Rabbi Ami. And the Gemara says that's because, according to Rabbi Ami, we require a maisa. There has to be an action, in this case, to organize the stones, the bricks, in such a way that it would be comfortable for sitting. And all that has to be done when? On Erev Shabbos. So let's say good morning to Don.
Come on in, Don.
Good morning, Don.
I'm not exactly sure what the joke is, but
I'm a disaster today.
He's a bull in a china shop, this guy.
What happened? Is the coffee spilled?
I know, it's like bumping things.
The coffee spilled?
Because I've learned my lesson, Rob. I always hold
right.
on.
That's it. That's it. That's it. I once. Oh, okay. I once actually.
Tommy said the sheet, so you have to do a mice.
Right. You have to do a mice. So he did a real mice. Right? Okay.
Can't just wipe.
Okay.
I should come in
now,
the door, right?
the way we have a girsa in Rashi. Rabbi Ami was rejecting what's called a Maisa Koldehu. That's the Girsa of the Maram in Rashi. Meaning, Rabbi Ami rejected Rav Asi because Rav Asi was just allowing you to do this very minimal kind of action to prepare the stones, in which case you were just, as we said before, clearing off the top of these pieces of concrete that got stuck on the top of the bricks. But the Beis Yosef has a different girsa in Rashi. And according to his girsa, Rashi interprets Rav Ami as rejecting hazmona b'maisa. There is no such thing as hazmona b'maisa. Afilu b'maisa choshuv, even if he does a very profound action, and he starts moving around the stones and the bricks, that's not necessarily enough. And it doesn't become a kli, and it retains its status as mukta. So then, if that be the case, we have to ask the following question. If we accept the girsa in Rashi of the Beis Yosef, that ein hazmana b'maisa moil, that even if he does hazmana b'maisa, it still would not be meaningful, and the stone remains muktzah then. I mean, it's not a kli, because even a maisa doesn't make it into a kli. So what did Rav Ami understand from the instruction of Rebbe to his Talmidim, Tzu'uva Limdum? Obviously, if he said Tzu'uva Limdum, that if you organize it in a certain way, moving these bricks around, then you're allowed to sit on it. And yet, the stones are muktzah. This is the problem that we have here. So let me just review the problem. According to the Girsa of the Beis Yosef and Rashi, there seems to be an absolute head-on collision, a contradiction in what Rashi is saying. Rashi is telling us that according to Rav Ami, you cannot convert these stones into a moshav, into some sort of a couch. You cannot remove the status of the stones as muktzah, even if you do a maisa choshev. But that can't be, because that contradicts the fact that Rebbe told us Talmidim to uvalimdu, that you reorganize the stones, and therefore you can sit on them tomorrow. So what is going on over here? You can't tell me from one side of your mouth that it's muktzah, because even a maisa choshev is not enough to remove the status of the stones as muktzah. And then turn around and say, well, that's what Rebbe told us, Talmidim, if you do this limdum thing, then they're allowed to sit on the stones, on Shabbos. So what I missed yesterday, and I apologize, and this you'll see on page Reish Nun Tes, in the top paragraph, the first paragraph, is that according to this girsa lo mahani, this is line 5, shum maisa, afilu maisa choshuv, lashvuye, to make the even into a kli. So please underline those words. And I missed that totally yesterday. What do you need, a pen? I have a pencil and a pen, either way. Just come to my desk and you'll have it. So again, you want to underline the words that on the fourth line, lefi girsa zu. Do you have that? I don't hear any responses, so I get very nervous when it's quiet. You know, you can hear a pin drop.
Yes, Rabbi.
Okay. Yes, mefakeh, right? Okay. So he says, lo mahani shum maisa. No matter what you do, you can't make a stone into a kli. A stone is a stone, and a kli is a kli, and never the twain shall meet. Vafilu b'maisa choshev. It won't work, lashvuye, to create, to transform the evan into a kli. And he quotes various achronim that understood in the Beis Yosef's girsa and Rashi that's what Rashi is saying. Oh. So now we have to figure out how then did Rebbe instruct the Talmidim to reconstruct the formation of these stones in such a way they can sit on it. So let's go back to the beginning of Rashi. Rashi says, Sadru osam, organize these stones, the heshivum, and set them up in such a way, kidei, okay, these are the key words in Rashi, shalonitztarech liga bahem lemochar. Rashi is telling you know what? The stones are muktzah, but if you organize them in such a way that all you have to do is just sit on them, then you won't have to touch the stones. This is not what I understood yesterday. Yesterday I was racking my brains to think what would be a maisa gomor that's even more than a maisa gomor that would remove the isa tiltil and make it into a kli. No! You can't make it into a kli. A stone remains a stone. But what Rashi is telling you is that Rebbe's instruction to his Talmidim was to organize it in such a way that all they have to do is just sit on it. They don't have to move and budge a thing. And what does that mean? Uvur dafilu im sidra mamishli yeshiva, even if they organize the stones in such a way that it's perfectly comfortable to sit on, lo mahani, it's not enough, lafkiya mehem shei muktzah, the stones still remain muktzah. Nu, so what did Rebbe tell his Talmidim? The reason that this heter works is, as the Marsha explains, here in our sugya, mishum she'ein tzarech l'taltalim od l'machar, that you're allowed to sit on something that's mukta as long as you don't move it. Umasha kosav Rashi liga mehen, that you won't even have to touch it, kavanoso, dehem eno mechusarim od negia v'tiltul, that they don't, they're not missing any sort of touching to move it around. That's the negia here, is the negia shel tiltul. In other words, they're exactly fit and suitable immediately for sitting on them. V'chol mukta aftu asur betiltul muta b'negia. So I'm allowed to sit on the stones. Why? Because I'm not moving the stones. So Rabosai, if this, let's say this was mukta, okay? This is not mukta, but let's say it was mukta. Would I be allowed to do this on Shabbos? Well, yeah. I moved it a little bit. That's moot. There's no Issa Negiya B'Muktzah. There's only an Issa Tilta. Okay, and then he quotes the Magen Avraham in Siman Shin Ches, who says that this is exactly what's going on. The stones remain Muktzah. You haven't changed the stones in any structural way. You just reorganized them. They remain stones. And the reason why you're allowed to sit on them is because there's no Iser Negia in Mukta, there's only an Iser Tiltul in Mukta.
Huh?
Yeah.
So when Rashi used the word Negia, he was only talking about Negia and Tiltul.
Right. Okay. Correct. Oh. Now I want you to fast forward to Os Beis, which is on the top of the bottom of the right column. And he says, what are we going to do with the Gemara in Beitza? The Gemara in Beitza says that if a branch falls from a tree on Yontif, then you're not allowed to use it for firewood. Why aren't you allowed to use it for firewood? In fact, even if you'll tell me that this branch is Mukta, because Nolad is Mukta, that's called Eitzim Shenoshim and Adekel. And why is it Mukta? Because it has no purpose. But yet, why can't I use it to burn my fireplace if I don't actually move the Eitzim? Do you follow what I'm saying? Let's say I could make a fire in such a way that these logs would feed my fire, but I don't have to move the Eitzim. So I did nothing to move it from spot to spot. And yet the Gemara says, it's Eino Chazi LaHasaki. You're not allowed to use these Eitzim Shenoshim and Adekel for Hasaka, for burning purposes. Why not? I'm not moving them. Maybe I'm touching them, but I'm not moving them. The answer is that this Gemara Beitza tells me that Mukta has two dimensions to it. Number one, it's an Issa Tiltul. And number two, there's an Issa Hanah, that you're not allowed to get benefit from Mukta on Shabbos. Mukta is Issa Hanah. And if that be the case, how could Rebbe allow his Talmidim to sit on Shabbos, on these stones, even if I grant you that you don't move the stones, that's not Tiltul, but nevertheless it's Hanah. He's benefiting from the stones by sitting on the stones. So I was asking you once, are you allowed to sit on a car on an automobile on Shabbos? Just sit on the back of the, you know, near the boot, near the trunk, right? And let's say you didn't move the automobile at all, so there's no tilt, it's only the gear. But the answer is that you're benefiting by sitting on top of the automobile. And therefore, Rav Soloveitchik doesn't understand this whole shtickle Torah of the Beis Yosef, the Girsan Rashi, that Rebbe instructed his Talmidim to organize it in such a way that we not have to do any tiltal of the stones, just plop down and rest on the stones. But you haven't got enough from Mukta. And that's where he starts with this concept called Hanah Shel Kilui. I'll just write that down on the board, because that's really a new concept for us. And the Be'inyan, I'll call it Isur Hanah Mimukta, it's only a Hanah Shel Kilui. What does the word Kilui mean?
Like a burning?
Completion.
Correct. Complete destruction.
Devouring.
That has to be completely devoured. The classical case of Hanah Shel Kilui in Halacha is Achila, when you eat something, that's Hanah Shel Kilui, or Sreifa, when you burn something, and Hanah Shel Kilui. And the real place in Shas, but it's not for us today, to study this concept is in Shviz, the laws of the seventh year, the sabbatical year, because there, you know, Shviz is also about Noshal Kiwi. Okay, fine. So this is what the Rav wants to suggest, that if you sit on Muktzah, Rashi is telling us, according to the Beis, there's no problem of Hanah because it's not Hanah Shel Kilu. You don't in any way destroy or detract from the stones. The Gemara Beis, on the other hand, tells you that you're not allowed to use this Muktzah for Hasaka, for burning, because that's called the Hanah Shel Kilu. And that's the paragraph, Dibra Maskel Ulach Ora. And that's what we got up to yesterday. But again, yesterday I really didn't understand what I was talking about. But we're up to Vahine, okay? Now, we have a Rashba in Shabbos. Now, I apologize, I was so busy writing the Marmakomos at the last minute for the second Shia that I didn't get a chance to pull out the Rashba from the shelves, but we'll try to do the best we can with the tools we have. Oh, this should be okay. So here, if anybody wants to do me a big favor and get me the Rashba, that's okay. If not, let's try to do the best we can.
Which bookshelf?
Well, listen carefully.
Yeah.
We're looking at the bookshelf straight across at the end of the wall, if you follow what I mean.
Okay.
All the way at the end of the Beis Medrash. And we're on the top right.
Okay.
So we're looking for the Rashba and Shabbos.
You're right about it.
Okay. We're looking for the Rashba and Shabbos on Thursday. But I just want to make that clear. Okay. So what's going on here in the sugya in Vamem Adlikin? That was a sugya that we never learned because we started with Perikira. And the Gemara on Daf Chav Tes has a discussion about Hadlaka, about burning Muktzah on Shabbos, to use on Yom Tov rather, to use it as firewood. And Rabbi Shimon is matir lahasik be'egozim, that since egozim are ochlim, they're edible, he can use them as firewood, but ein masikim beklipos sehem, but the what he called the shell that surrounds the walnut, which also has a certain combustibility, that's a problem. Because that's not ochle, that's not edible, and therefore it might have the status of muktzah. You can't use muktzah for hasaka purposes. And if you recall, we spoke about shivrei kelim according to Rabbi Yehuda, that you're not allowed to use that for hasaka either, because shivrei kelim, since they don't have a tzuras hakli, they forfeit the shem kli. And if it's not a kli, it becomes muktzah, and you can't use it for hasaka purposes. That would be according to Rabbi Yehuda. And it seems like in the case of kli be'egozim, even Reb Shimon would agree that it's muktzah. And therefore you can't use it for sreifa purposes. So I have a feeling that Shmuel got lost somewhere. I've been trying to sort of stretch this out.
It seems to be in use somewhere.
Ah, it's in use. Okay, that makes sense. In this case, I'm not the culprit, but we'll try to do the best that we can. Okay, then? So here's the quote of the Rashba. If you have the paragraph Vihine, line 4. The afal gav d'memele dolek v'holech. Right?
Yeah.
Well, you want to open it, do me a favor if you can, Shmuel, to Daf Chavtes Amid Aleph. Okay, and look for a paragraph that starts V'chi Adlik. So that would save me some time here. So again, what's this problem with using Muktzah for burning? I don't actually necessarily, thank you, throw it into the fire. Let's say it. Right?
Hana'ah.
Oh, excellent.
For sure.
So the shever kli, this broken shard that he wants to use to as combustion for his fire, he's not let's say being metaltal it necessarily. And therefore it would seem that the Gemara is saying that the problem here is that there's an Isra Hanoh min HaMukta. So he says the following, that there's a difference here between Hishtamshus Biyadayim. Now, if I take the Shivrei Kelim and I pick them up in order to throw them into the fire, and a case where there's Adlaka, but I don't have to move it at all. And he says the following. In the case of Mimela means where you don't have his active intervention, V'dolek V'holech, and it burns on itself, V'nena Mimenu, and he enjoys benefiting from this fire of Mishtamish Lioro. He uses he benefits from the light. He says Shelo Asru Ella Letaltalo, because Mukt is only also the tiltal, only Ochlo, or to eat it. Vafilu Mishtamish Bo Biadayim Kigon Adloka, even if he's benefiting from the hadlaka, that's not achila. O lismoch bo kare amita. Again, this is a little bit strange in physics, but apparently you can take an egg and put it under a leg of a table or a bed, and it's going to hold up the bed. I don't know why it doesn't crack. You have to know the physics of it. But I'm sure that
harder eggs.
No, I don't know. That's what he says. And he says that if you want to use the egg to hold up your bed, right under the leg of the bed, that's awesome because this egg is mukta. Vafilu bimkomo. Even if you were to put the bed on top of the egg, she'eno mezizo metaltal. He doesn't move the egg. He's not metaltal the egg. Avol hanoa haba mimela shapir dami. That if the Hanoah happens by itself, Mimela, without his active intervention, that's okay. So let's just see inside, and we'll try to clarify.
I thought food is not a kli, and therefore it can't be mukta.
Okay, so let's go slow, okay? I'm not ready for questions because I don't have it yet myself. He says the following. The afal gav de mimela dolek vaholech v'nena mimen mishtamish li oro. It's okay. Shelo asru el letaltalo oli ochlo. Right? If you move it or you have hanov achila, that's awesome. Afilu mishtamish bo biyadayim kigo hadloka o lismo po kari amita v'afilu bimkomo she'eno mezizo u'metaltalo. So it seems like the Rashba is making a distinction between the following two scenarios. One is where he just puts down his bed on top of the egg, right, the leg of the bed. And the other is where he has to move the egg in order to situate it underneath the leg of the bed. In both cases, he's having hanoah from mukta. But in one case, it's hanoah haba mimela, says the Rashba, v'shapir domi. In the other case, he was mazes mimkomo. He moved the egg, and he was metaltal the egg. So let's just read now the Hari Kedem, and he writes the following. Mevuar l'chora b'divrei HaRashba. What we see from the Rashba is the following. D'chol maisa shel ishtamshus biyadayim asur. That to use mukta by physically placing it in a way that you'll benefit from it, that's prohibited. Now, in the case of the egg, when he moves the egg in order to situate the bed on the egg and balance the bed, he's not being machala the egg. He's not violating what we call the hanoshal kilu. The egg still remains in its original intact, in its original state. So we see that kol ma'isa shel shtamshus b'yadayim, anytime you set up muktzah with your hands, you move the muktzah in order to enjoy the benefit of that muktzah, also v'gam anosha eina shel kiwur k'mo lismok bo kariyam mita, even that's considered prohibited. Now, if that's prohibited, what's the difference between sitting on stones, which according to the Beis Yosef is mutter because we said it's not anoshal kilu, he doesn't detract in any way from the stones, and the case of placing the egg under the leg of the bed where he doesn't detract at all from the egg. So he quotes Rabbi Kiva Eger in Simon Shin Chafei, who writes, Lefi zevare oso leishev ala evan. We're not allowed to sit on stones. Demali bein somech kariyamita. What's the difference if the legs of the bed are supported by the egg? O somech atzmo olav, or his own body is supported by the stone, which is like the egg.
Metalto, isn't that the fundamental difference? He moved the egg there, but Rebbe told them to put the stones in the right order before Shabbat. So there's a fundamental difference in these cases.
Correct, but the Rashba says that let's see what the Rashba says again. The language of the Rashba is a little bit complicated here. Let's see. See, David, I'm not sure, and what I'm going to tell you now has to be polished up. I'm telling you right away that it's not. The Rashi wants to tell you that if you place the egg down, again, what right did you have to place the egg down? I don't know. But let's say somebody did such a thing.
It's a nolad egg, right?
A nolad egg. Come to it.
Thank you. And you're placing it there on Shabbat, not before Shabbat.
On Shabbat.
Obviously.
He went ahead and he put his bed and leaned it on this muktzah, correct? I have to shut this down. I forgot to shut this down. So the Rashba says that that's awesome. Now, again, we're not talking about moving the egg. I mean, that was violated. Right. That was a given. I don't know exactly how that happened or why that happened, but we're talking about putting the bed on top of the egg, and the Rashba says it's awesome. Why? And the Rashba says, because this is ahana, the Rashba says, afilu bimkomo, even though he's not moving the egg, velo mezizo umetaltalo, but he's still having hana from the egg. So again, I owe you a debt, as I always do, but I don't know exactly how the egg got there. Somebody moved the egg there in place, and now he wants to use the egg lismoch bo kariyam mita, and the Rashba says that that's prohibited. So Kivenga asks, what's the difference between lismoch bo kariyam mita and yeshiva al gabia evan?
To the designation, same, no? It's the designation. The stones were designated before Shabbat. That's what.
No, but again, David, that's correct in our Gersa before the Beis Yosef, but after the Beis Yosef, the stones still remain mukt. How do we solve the problem of sitting on the stones? Wait a minute, wait one second. How do we allow? How did Rebbe allow sitting on these stones if they're mukt? After all, you're getting benefit from it. So we said because it's anah shel eina shel kilu, he doesn't in any way detract from the stones; they remain intact. No, so why can't I put my bed on top of this egg, which is mukta, if I'm not detracting in any way from the egg? Says the Rashi, I'm not allowed to do it because it's a hanah, and you're not allowed to benefit from mukta. So why am I allowed to sit on these stones, which are going to the Beis Yosef's Girsa? Not your upshot. Your upshot is before the Beis Yosef, and that's our Girsa. That the Evan remains Mukta. But the only thing is, by moving it around at Erev Shabbos, you circumvent the Isur Mukta, because you're not going to have to move the stones on Shabbos. Just plop yourself down on the stones on Shabbos. So what? But you're still being Nene from Mukta. And the answer was, it's not Anoshel Kilui. Well, the Kari Amit is also not Anoshel Kilui, and yet the Rashba prohibits it.
There's a Migui problem. The egg was not designated before Shabbat for this purpose. If you had designated before Shabbat for this purpose, even though it remains muksa, I don't know how you can designate an egg that wasn't nolah.
It's not designated for the stones. He decides on Yom Tov that he wants to put his bed and balance it or support it by this egg, right? The Rashba says that's not allowed.
I would agree with the Rashba. Sounds logical.
So then why am I allowed to sit on the stones?
Because they were designated before Shabbat for that purpose.
You're missing the point. Designation is only relevant when you can remove these or Mukta. But here, the Beis Yosef's Girsa has it that there is Mukta. All that Rebbe wanted to accomplish is that you don't violate these or Mukta. You follow? It's not that designation... Leave out the word designation. The word designation is totally out of place here in Rashi, the way the Beis Yosef reads Rashi. It has nothing to do with designation. What it is that on every Shabbos, I'm going to set it up in such a way they can benefit from books without moving books. It has nothing to do with designation.
So let's not talk about designation. Let's talk about the egg.
Yeah.
How can you designate a muksa item on Shabbat for any use?
You cannot, and therefore you're not allowed to now use that egg. But what do you mean use the egg? So the Rashba says, Eina mezizah mimkomo. You can't use the egg to support your bed, even though you're not moving it. So where's the Isur? It's not tiltul. By default, it can only be Hanoh, that he's having Hanoh from it. But the problem is, it's Hanoh she'ein bo kilui. If he's talking about Adloka, if he's talking about burning it, Nicha, that I understand. If you could organize, you could engineer it so that your mukta, your Eitzim Shadoshim in Ilan, would burn without you moving it, it would still be Asur, says the Rashba. Why? Because it's Hanoshal Kilui. That I can understand. But now the Rashba is saying that even in the case of Lisbo Bokari Amita, which is not Hanoshal Kilui, it's Asur B'mukta, even if he doesn't move it right now. So Kivega says, I don't understand. Then how can you sit on a stone on Shabbos? Mali lismoch kari amito, mali somech atzmolov. What difference does it make if I use the egg to support my bed, or I use the mukta to support my body?
Can I make the parallel case properly in the stones? It would be a case of someone arranging the stones for you to sit on them. Then would you be able to sit on them? That would be
so. Vegas says, according to the Rashba, it should be also.
That's right. Then it would be also, because you're arranging them on Shabbat for somebody else to sit on them. That would be a problem. That would be the parallel of the egg. But at the moment, we don't have a parallel case to the egg. The stones rearranged before Shabbat, to me, is not the same.
Again, as I said before, that's only before the Beis Yosef. But the Beis Yosef himself says that the Evan remains an Evan. And even though you organized it, it's not, you haven't made a structural change, it's still not a clue. But the Beis Yosef says arrange it on Erev Shabbos in a way that you don't have to violate these mukta.
Yeah, the egg which is not being moved on Shabbat, compared to the bricks which are not being moved on Shabbat, and compare the bed
it was moved on Shabbat.
It wasn't moved. But
what did it do? It didn't come from the chicken and just come there.
But the assumption is you're not moving the egg. The egg's already been moved, you're not moving the egg.
But someone moved it. That's why I say it would be the parallel case if someone moved the rocks and the stones and made a chair for you out of the rocks and stones on Shabbat. Then could you sit on it? That would be a parallel case.
So again, I just in order that we should make some progress, let's present Rabbi Kivega's, analogy. Rabbi Kivega says that sitting a bed on an egg which is mukta is the same as sitting your body on a stone which is mukta. The Rashba prohibits you from putting the bed, sitting it down on Muktzeh. And if that be the case, says Rabbi Kivega, we'd have to draw the conclusion, according to the Rashba, if I sit on Muktzeh, on stones, that would be a violation of the Isra HaNomina Muktzeh, even though there's no Kilui, and you're not destroying the stone. B'tzarech Ian Al-Zebi Divrei Rashi Hanal, Rabbi Kivega says this is difficult because of Rashi here in Kufchav Heyam and Beis, our Rashi, Nidbach Shal Avonim, you have this whole structure of stones. Dimahani, you'll be able to avoid any violation of Muktzeh in Sidrum Liyeshiva Me'erev Shabbos. If on Erev Shabbos you organize in such a way that all you have to do on Shabbos is just plop down on the stones, without having to be metaltal the stones. And Rabbi Kivega says, V'ayin Magen Avram Simon Shin Ches. And Rabbi Soloveitchik suggests that what Rabbi Kivega meant over here in his postscript, when he says, Ayin Magen Avram, is that the Magen Avram writes in Simon Shin Men, based on our Rashi, Dishari Leishem Hala Evan, that you're allowed to sit on a stone. If, and only if, Belila Aziza Mimkoma, if you're not moving it from place to place. Vahu Neged, this against the Rashba in the case of Lismo Bas Karyan Mita. So Rav Soloveitchik now, for the balance of this essay, is going to try to differentiate between putting a bed on top of an egg and supporting the bed and sitting on an oven. And honestly, to me it looks like a lost cause. You know, I would throw up my hands in despair and say there's no chance. I mean, they're identical cases. You know, you can't differentiate between A and A. You know, A and B, maybe, but not A and A. Yesh lechalik. You have it on the bottom. We can differentiate between somech kare hamita al habeitza levein yoshev ala evan. Now, Rabbi said, the reason why I'm so interested in this, even though I think, honestly, I don't want to prejudice you one way or the other, but I think Rosalvich is really splitting hairs over here. But it's important to me because it really does have halachic implications in terms of what benefits are you allowed to have from Muktzeh if you're not moving the Muktzeh. And these are very relevant issues. So in other words, I want to get the principles here. When is it also because I'm putting the bed on the egg, and when is it mutz because I'm just sitting on the stump? He says the following. In other words, there's no independent Iser Hanah from Muktzeh. It's not, you know, it doesn't self-generate itself ex nihilo, that Asur Banah. The Torah says that certain things are Asur Banah, Arla is Asur Banah, Klai Kerem is Asur Banah, Chomitz Bepesach is Asur Banah. These are Isur Hanah. Why should Muktzeh be Asur Banah? And the answer is that Hanah is really nothing more than an extension. It's not the original. Nothing originates with an Isur Hanah. The Isur Hanah doesn't emerge out of nowhere. But rather, it's a case or a form, if you will, of achila. The original Isur in Muktzeh is achila. The pasuk says, "V'ichinu es asher yaviu." Prepare that which you're going to eat. And Rabbi Yehuda, for one, again, we pass like Rabbi Shimon, but he understood in that pasuk that the Torah itself was telling us that even ochlin have to be prepared before Shabbos, even something that's edible. And if you don't prepare it, it's muktzeh, don't eat it. Hanah becomes an extension of achila. Meaning what the Rabbanan are doing is they're extending achila, but again, if you're extending something, if it's a sort of a subcategory, if you follow me, what do you need? When you extend something, you have the father and then you have the son, you know, the av and the tov. What do you always have to need? You know, what do you require in order to extend something? Anybody?
It has to be connected to the
it's similarity. Okay, that's the word I'm looking for. In other words, when we talk about Isur Hanah as a broadening or an extending of the Isur Achila, the original was really Achila, then the Hanah has to be bound by certain limitations, restrictions, in order that it be similar to Achila. He says, "Dibachol muktzah milvad ha'isa tiltil shemuktzah yesh kam isra achila, the achilas hamuktzah." Oh, valkein, and therefore, if it's an extension, lo nesra ela ishtamshes dumya da achila. It's got to be in some way similar to achila. Now, let's ask the following question. You are supporting the leg of your bed by muktzah, right? What would you call it in English? It's the level. I don't know. What word in English would describe the function of the egg here? It's supporting the bed. I don't know. This should be a better word for it, right? Mm-hmm. It's balancing the bed. Is that similar to achila? If Rav Soloveitchik's premise is correct, that the Isra Ano is not an independent Isra Ano, but rather it's an extension of achila, what's the similarity between supporting the bed so that it doesn't, you know, what's the word, that it doesn't tilt in one direction or another, and achila? You know, like I would have to rack my brains to figure that one out. I can't figure that one out. So if salvation comes up with a, I don't know what to call it, I mean, just it's a very abstract revolution here. And he says, okay, so this page you don't have, Reish Samach. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
I wish I had a machine right here, so I didn't have to bother anybody.
Do you want me to go photocopy?
Yeah, but then I won't be able to read it. So let me just read the next few lines, and then we'll photocopy it. Do we know that? He says the following. Be Osa Shah, at that very moment, when the egg is supporting the bed... Okay, I'm just going to read this. You know, don't throw rotten apples at me, because I mean, I didn't write the script. He says, "Habeitza b'teila lahamita v'nieis chelik me'amita v'amamidim shalo." He says, how do you define a bed? A bed is anything that keeps the bed straight. Do you follow what I mean? Keeps it balanced, I'll use that word.
Frame. Talking about the frame?
Yeah, let's say, you know, you have the legs, right, the bed is made up of a mattress, you know, a flat part in the mattress and so forth, but you have to have legs, because otherwise it's on the floor.
Right.
So to lift it up off the floor, you have the legs. There's no question in anyone's mind that the legs of the bed are part of the bed. Mm-hmm. Now, those legs might have wheels to it. What would you say about that? That's also part of the bed. Okay. Now, in the case of the wheels, which Rav Soloveitchik doesn't mention the wheels, but that allows you to move the bed to get it to wherever you want. It's certainly logical to assume that it's part of the bed. But how far can the human mind go over here if you're really abstract? What happens if I add something to this picture that allows the bed to be perfectly balanced? Let's say it's tipping on one side. So whatever I take... You know, I grab something and I put it under the bed to balance it, that too becomes part of the bed. You see, the trick here is it's not in any way attached to the bed, but it doesn't matter. We have to look at the function. So he says the following. Again, listen to these three words. Wow. Habeta bitela lamita. Bitel means the egg, we nullify its independent status. Now we look at it, and it's no longer an egg. It's part of the mita. Now, I would have said that's good news for the Jews, because if it's part of the mita, then it becomes what?
Not
a kli, right? If it's a kli, it's not muktzah. But that's not what Rav Soloveitchik wants to say. He wants to say it's bad news. Why is it bad news? He says, Kevan shabetza nies chelik me'amita, as a result of the fact that the egg becomes part of the bed itself... This is going to solve that missing piece of the puzzle, the mystery. How could this hana of balancing the bed be similar to achila? Well, what's the connection to eating something? He says the following. He He's saying, I think, it's almost like philosophical, that the egg loses its identity. That's what achil is all about. Achil means to take food, which has an independent existence as an entity, and now intake it into your body, so that it's gone. The egg is gone. What do you mean the egg is gone? I still see the egg. You have to be very abstract here. You've got to live in the higher worlds here. He says, I will be Yoshev ala Evan. Ein ha'evin b'teila legufa. When you sit on a stone, you are one thing, one entity, your body, and the stone is another entity. The stone never loses its identity. And you know what he might be saying, that there's a certain... I don't know what the antonym of the word permanence is, a certain transient relationship here between the person and the stone that he's sitting on. In the case of the egg, it's a little bit more permanent. I don't know, maybe after Shabbos we'll find a better way of engineering this bed. But right now, you know, the egg seems to be doing a perfectly good job. And again, we don't know, Shmuel says their eggs were harder than ours. I don't know exactly the physics of it. Right? Okay. But he says the following. In the case of sitting on a stone, who Yoshev Olev and Nenamimen, I'm not going to deny, says Rav Salvation, that he's benefiting from the stone, from the Mukta, but Ein Zed Dumya Dachila Kla. This Yisrachila, I'm sorry, Yisrael Noah, could not be defined and accepted as an extension of Achila, because in Achila, the Ochel loses its identity. I swallow it up. That's the ultimate hanah. The ultimate benefit from something is when I take it and I literally incorporate it into my bloodstream, into my system. That doesn't happen here in the case of the Evan. So it's not at all similar to Achila. But on an abstract, you know, halachic, legal level, the bed swallows up the egg. It eats up the egg. I mean, again, you know, I can't even express these words. You have to really be an abstract thinker here. He says the following. That mukta per se is not asur bahana. Mukta is only asur b'achila, or any hana that's similar to achila. And therefore, if I sit on the stone, you can tell me that I'm nene from the stone, and I'm not going to deny that. It's keeping me up. But that's not asur in mukta. Mukta never generated an isra hana. It only generated a dumya, an extension of achila. And the bed case with the egg, that's called an extension of achila. Whoa. Now, I've been working on this safe, as you know, for a long time now, at least 6 months. This is the most abstract I've ever seen. You know, we've seen some pretty revolutionary ideas here in this safe, but this one takes, you know, this one grabs the egg. I mean, really, you know. Okay.
I mean, I can see the food. I mean, others,
By the way, as we're discussing this, if somebody would be kind enough to run over, if not, I'll do it, but no, not you, Ben, because we're discussing this. Maybe somebody could just photocopy these two pages. You know, all you have to do is press A3 and you get both pages. Do I give it to Shmuel? Okay, thanks, Shmuel. It'll give you a chance to get a new fresh air also.
Yes. I didn't know why he has to go so far.
Wait, Ben is... if you don't mind, I mean, we're only five people, but still...
How food could be nullified. In other words, I can't let's say there's no air, if I can't carry an egg into public domain, the minute I eat it, it's nullified into me, and I can... I have no problem seeing that. The food is nullified once we eat it, but the thing that's attractive, that the egg is nullified because it's...
Well, let me ask you a question. If you look at this egg that's holding up a bed, what would you call it? Would you call it an ochel? It's an egg, and I'm going to crack it and make French toast out of it? Well, what am I doing with this egg? Functionally, it's like the furthest in my mind from being an ochel.
Right.
It's now like if I would have found a, I don't know, what do you usually use to...
Telephone book to support it.
Yeah. Even in more than that, you know, it's almost like a... You know, that an engineer would manufacture a kind of a metal substance that would fit perfectly into the socket of the leg of the egg, you know, of the leg of the bed. You know, the egg now becomes like a metal part of the bed. The last thing in the world you want to do is eat this egg, because if you eat the egg, the bed is going to fall apart. But, you understand what I'm saying?
But the bed is not mukta, is that correct?
The bed is a kli. That's not mukta.
So if the egg is absorbed into the bed, the egg becomes part of the kli, which can be mukta. But here he's saying...
Yeah, that would not...
That's a conclusion from what he's saying.
That might be a technical problem, because I don't know if on Shabbos you can nullify mukta and make it into a kli. Right? You know, it's all our discussions about... Thank you so much. This is Kelly Mitzvot. All our discussions... About converting, transforming mukta into a kli, This, if you don't mind, then, you know, just put it in the archives. Yeah.
Okay.
They all spoke about Erev Shabbos or Erev Yom. We're talking about putting the bed on the egg on Shabbos itself. So I don't know if you can nullify the egg as muktzah and make it into a kli. But on the other hand, what you could say is that the hana, the benefit that I'm getting, the way, the method by which I'm benefiting from this muktzah, from this egg, is such that it loses its identity.
Doesn't Chesi Shabbos come into...
Could be. Could be. You know, we never really learned that subject of Muktzah L'Chatzi Shabbos. We touched on it. David, you wanted to say something
for me? If Muktzah is essentially attached to Ochel, then why do you have to go so far? Why don't you just say the egg is literally Ochel? Okay, it's not being used in that function at the moment, but it's still Ochel, so it's more connected to Muktzah than a rock even. You know?
No, but again, we're not talking about the egg. We're talking about the person. Are you benefiting from the egg? If the egg is muktzah, right, because even though it's edible, but that's irrelevant because it was born, it was laid on Shabbos, on Yom Tov, right? So it's muktzah. Now what are my choices? My choices are, well, number one, I'm not allowed to move it, but let's say I could benefit from it without moving. Well, I'm not allowed to benefit from it. Well, says Rav Soloveitchik, we have to ask ourselves a different question. Our criterion for benefiting it has got to be a benefit that's similar to achila, in which it becomes swallowed up. And he wants to say on an abstract level that the Rashba that we saw is claiming that you swallow up the egg. Who swallows up the egg? The bed swallows up the egg. And that hanah that I'm getting is me'ain, it's in some abstract world similar to hanah sachim.
But fundamentally we're trying to...
That's the top paragraph here on the new page that you just got.
Why the bed example is more strict, machmir, than the rock example, or the sitting on the rock story, right? That's how do we explain that?
Correct. Because in the rock remains a separate entity.
Right,
it's not swallowed up.
Okay, but essentially the egg is still food, and the rock is a rock. So, and the food you were saying before is more, we're more machmir about food in terms of muktzah. That's the original hasmakta of muktzah, it's through food. So you could make just the kesha that the egg is food, therefore it's more connected. It's more machmir about it in terms of muktzah.
No, but you have to add one point. How am I eating muktzah? If the Easter is eating muktzah, why is placing the bed on top of the egg considered like eating muktzah? That's your goal.
Maybe
whereas sitting on the
egg
is not eating muktzah. Yeah.
Maybe the egg is getting smashed that way. And just the smashed egg is...
Well, if it's smashing, then I don't think it's going to help you much, because again, you want to make sure that the bed doesn't tilt in one direction or the other.
I don't think...
Do you remember these children's books that we read? They have these pictures of those little round guys that keep swallowing up things.
Yeah.
You know, and then they play it on the...
Pac-Man.
Pac-Man and all that stuff. They play with it with the computer, the phones and all that. What Tarav is saying is that the bed is a Pac-Man and it's eating up this egg. Again, if that helps anybody. I don't think that's going to help anybody.
I
mean, but
the rub is forced into an abstract solution because the case is so abstract to start with. We should be like getting stuck into the rush bar for coming up with such an abstract case, because really this case is...
Yeah.
I mean, only...
Okay,
this is what we
have, David, you know, at this point. And the Pac-Man is not able to swallow up the stone. The stone refuses. You know, you want to sit on me, you want to benefit from me, that's one thing, but you can't swallow me up. The stone is the stone. Tomorrow I may decide to use the stone in construction. But the egg somehow gets a certain permanence by putting the bed on the egg. There are a lot of factors here that come into play, you know, a lot of different variables. But the Pac-Man, that's the image that I want to use, you know. The gobbling up of this egg. That's achil.
Would anything change if it was a rock instead of an egg? Like a more practical example. Someone put a rock there on Shabbat. Under this. The same thing.
Now the bed would swallow up the rock.
Right.
Because then the rock, the stone becomes, like the telephone book that Ben mentioned before, becomes part of the structure of the bed. It's very interesting because I'm looking at this thing underneath the leg of the bed and I'm wondering what is it. So you and I would say, well, let's look at it. Oh, it's a telephone book. Oh, it's an egg. Oh, it's a stone. No. You rise up to an abstract world and it now is a functional part of the bed. I give the example of like the wheels that attach to the bottom of the bed.
So if you have a David and I was just discussing, if you have a situation more practical, the table on Shabbat is wobbling, and you want to straighten it out because you have all these guests coming, so you can't move something that's muksa to put it under the leg. But if you move the say there was something on the floor, or a 2-year-old kid somehow pushes something, you now pick up the bed and put it on top of it. That would be okay.
And that's muksa? Well, what are you putting on top of what?
Something muksa.
No, that's awesome, because then you're gobbling up that something.
See, that's the problem. It's the opposite of the conclusion. Is the opposite of what you would think. Since it's absorbing it, since something that is not muksa is absorbing something.
So that's your sugi b'chatzis Shabbos. Again, we're not. We're not expertise enough in the technicalities. So that's what I call a technical.
Okay.
For some reason, you can't take books and make it into a kli. You know, but on the other hand, if you're talking about its permanent relationship now, or its, you know, the transformation of its entity, I'm looking at it and I'm not saying that's an egg that's holding up my bed. That's a piece of metal that's holding up my bed. That's like a functional piece that the manufacturer would produce. In this case, you took something else. And if that something else is mukta, then the bed gobbles up the mukta because the mukta loses its functionality as a separate entity. Again, that just, you know, I admit to you, I'm just a referee here. You know, I'm just trying to move through it. Now, in the next paragraph, he goes a step further, and he wants to suggest the following. He says, "Kol din muktzah l'achila, hu din miyuchad biyantiv v'lo b'shabbos." Now, wait a second. If I were to ask you, where are we intuitively, right? A knee-jerk response. Where are we more machmer, on Shabbos or on Yontif?
Shabbos.
Here's where in Hilchas Muktzah, so if anybody quizzes you from now until doomsday, where is Yom Tov more chomer than Shabbos? Tell him Muktzah. But tell him Hari Kedem Amud Reish Sam. Right? That's what you have to add. That we're going to be more machmer on Yom Tov with regard to Muktzah than we are on Shabbos. And by the way, I think maybe the logic behind this is because since Yom Tov is Kal, you know, it's lenient, people might, you know, be tended to be mezalzli, you know, they'll be careless in yontif. So we have to take even a... So this Isra Achila, which we've been positing here, that you're not allowed to eat mukta, comes along with salvation, and he wants to suggest that's only on yontif. And on Shabbos, there is no Isra of Achila's mukta.
Wow.
How does he see such a thing? So the Rama, at the beginning of Hilchas Yontif, Perek Aleph Halacha Yud Ches, says the following. This is paragraph Ode, and we're up to line 4.
Okay.
Batam de muktzah biyantiv, kaimalon kirab Yehuda de islay muktzah. Wow. This is wild. If I were to wake you up in the middle of the night and ask you in the machlokas, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda islay muktzah, Rabbi Shimon leslay muktzah, who do we paskin like? What would you tell me? No, you didn't give me an answer fast enough.
Rabbi Shimon.
We paskin Rabbi Shimon. Lakula. Again, we always find the exceptions where even Reb Shimon would agree, like Grogus Vitzi Mukim, and Chisar and Kis, and so on. But let's say Muktzah Machmas Mius, for example, which is the classical battlefield between Rabbi Yehuda and Reb Shimon, we passing like Reb Shimon. So all these cases of old, you know, old Neros, you know, that we used, and they're a little bit repulsive, and they have oil in them, and yeah, you know, blah, 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 we're always going to be making like Reb Shimon. Now I'm going to turn it the other way around. I'm going to ask my question again, and you're going to give me the opposite answer. How do we paskin in the machlokas Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, with regard to Yontif? Like Rabbi Yehuda. So, for example, Nolad is going to be also Aloch on Yontif, right, and it might be Mutar on Shabbos. And he says, if you do an analysis of the Rambam, this is what you're going to conclude. And again, and this is on line 4 and 5. He says, "Behilchas Yontif, Muktzah the Yontif, Kaimalon Kir Rabbi Yehuda." Please underline those words. Kir Rabbi Yehuda de Islay Muktzah, Ubishavis Halachik Rabbi Shimon de Leslay Muktzah. Isn't that paradoxical? And I see it. He says in the Rambam. The Rambam writes, "Ketzad Tarnagolos Homenis Legadol Beitzim V'Sharam Muad L'Charisha Kol Elu V'Chayotzem Muktzahen." The Rambam at the beginning of Hilchas Yontif says that if the Tarnagolas lays an egg, the egg is mukta. There are other cases of a shar ha'omid l'charisha, fine. In other words, there are certain animals that you don't shech them because you need them for as a work animal, like an ox. So that's also mukta, and it's asur on Yontif. And the Rambam goes ahead and he says, Muktzehen, and please underline the next three words, V'asur lechomen b'yantif. Why does the Rambam add the word b'yantif? Not just because he's writing an Ilfis Yantif, because he wants to tell you that this is a special halach in Yantif, that on Yantif you're not allowed to eat Muktzeh. Until you prepare them this egg on Erev Yontif. So let's say you have an ox that usually you would thresh with, you plow with, but you decided, you know, I got a new shipment of oxen for my Harisha purposes, I'm going to eat this on Yontif. So Erev Yontif, you already prepared it. Aval b'Shabbos, says the Rambam. This is the Rambam. You can't blame Rav Salvation for this. Hakol muchan etzel Shabbos. We passed like Rav Shimon. V'eino tzarech hachana. Again, hakol muchan with certain exceptions, but as a general rule, everything that's edible, that, you know, time of the isko, whatever it might be, it could be edible, is mutter. There's no need for hachana. You remember that we had a long discussion here in the Harei Kedem that according to Rav Shimon, there's what's called hachana me'elov. You know, the cheft itself is mechinis atzmo, right? That was Rav Shimon. Perhaps we could suggest the chiluk din muktzah b'Shabbos din muktzah b'yantif, that there are two different distinct categories of muktzah. There's a muktzah of Shabbos and a muktzah of yantif. The din muktzah b'Shabbos eino mishum chisaron hachana, because we passing like Rav Shimon, and don't talk to me about the absence of hachana. I didn't go ahead and designate it. On the contrary, I put it away for marketing purposes. Hakol muchan etzel Shabbos, everything is considered muchan. You're innocent until proven guilty, till you lock it up. Elohu gzeras tiltul asar atu hotzah. What we do find in muktzah is sometimes we don't want you to be moving things on Shabbos because you might carry it out into Rishus HaRabim, or because you might upset your enjoyment of Shabbos. Shabbos is a day that has to be distinct and different than the rest of the week, and now you're moving around Kalim the whole time, so that we don't want to do. Avol be Ochlin. Ochlin food stuff, that's not Kalim, that is Mukhan Me'elov, that's considered Hakhanu.
Before it's food, it shouldn't have been.
Okay, wait, let's go slowly. Rabosa, leave out the egg and the beds and the stones and the sitting, leave out all that. We're getting to a major breakthrough here. And we're saying that on Shabbos, you can talk about an Issur Tiltul of Kalim. And the reason for that is either because A, you might come and bring the kli out to Rishus HaRabim on Shabbos, violate Hatzah, or maybe B, because it's going to upset your experience, your Shabbos experience, right? Holy brother. He says, I will be ochlim. When it comes to food, there's no din of hachana, there's no requirement of hachana, and there's no Torah's muktzah, and there's no Issur Tiltul, because Issur Tiltul's on Kalim. All that is as far as Shabbos is concerned. Masha ain't came the yontif. Ein hakol muchan etzel yontif. The Rambam writes that not everything is considered muchan etzel yontif. So, for example, this egg that was laid on yontif. So, if I look at the egg, I want to crack it and eat it. It's ochlin, and on Shabbos I don't need hachana on ochlin. But on yontif, you need hachana. Ein hakol muchan etzel yontif. Not everything is considered muchan in yontif. You need a hachanan. You can't be making something that didn't exist in the world going into yontif. It's memela. Shayach iser muktza gam biochlin. So this new concept of muktza applies on yontif in a very unique way, and it applies even to ochlin. Mishum chisar nachan, if there was no hachan, it was nola. And therefore, chamir iser muktzah b'yantif mi b'Shabbos. Because again, on Shabbos, when it comes to ochlin, we don't need a hachana. So this egg that was laid on Shabbos, if it's an ochel, even though it couldn't possibly have had hachana on erev Shabbos, it's not muktzah, because there ain't no such thing as muktzah b'ochlin. On yantif, you need hachana even for ochlin. And again, I don't think this is some sort of gzeras hakasuv, you know, some sort of holy, you know, holy divine decree that we don't understand, like Paraduma, but it means that with regard to Yontif, we were very, very careful in order to make sure that people would observe Yontif properly. V'alpizeh nira lomar bozeh gufa cholok Shabbos mi Yontif din muktzah l'achila. Tehine yisod din mutzal achila eino mitam shloye iluchok b'shabes kiluchok b'chol kak yisodu mishum chisor nachonu. When we talk about mukta and ochlin, it's always going to be because it's lacking in achonu. And Reb Shimon says, as far as Shabbos is concerned, you don't need achon in ochlin. In Kenya Shlom, the Kol says Shach b'yantiv. In Yantiv, we have a new principle which applies even to ochlin, that ein akol muchan etzel yantiv. In Shabbos, everything that's edible is considered muchan, but in Yantiv, you need achon. And if it's no lad, there was no achon. Now we're on the top left column. In Ken, kishem shekol ochel nechshav kimuchan etzel Shabbos. Koloshen Aram perkvav. Perchavav milch Shabbos olch yudal ein sham ochel shu muktzah b'Shabbos klal. With regard to ochlin, there is no such thing as muktzah. So again, we're not talking about techiya v'yadayim and something that's not edible. It's very sour and so forth. So, but if it's edible and he didn't throw it away, then it's not muktzah. Kol muchani, the Rambam says, and that line only appears where in the Rambam? Well, when the Rambam says that with regard to Ochlin, I call Mukha, where would I find that? In Hilchas Shabbos, not in Hilchas Yontif. Because in Hilchas Yontif, the Rambam says the opposite. He says, Ein akol Mukhan Eitzel Yontif. You need Achon on Erev Yontif, even for something that's an Ochel. But the Shabbos, I call Mukhan Eitzel Shabbos. And you don't need Achon. It's Hochinami called Dovash Aroy Latashmish. Hainu Le'inyan Atashmish Aroy Lohu Nechshav Lemukhan Eitzel Shabbos. Notice Rav Shimon extends this halacha from Ochlin to anything. Just like in Ochlin, we say it's always Mukhan and you don't have to go out of your way to be making it. It's considered automatically Mukhan. So too, any other object. As far as Shabbos is concerned, Rav Shimon says if it has a function, then it doesn't need Hakhana. It's automatically Mukhan. L'achi ein iser, ein shayach iser shtamshus b'mukhtzah b'Shabbos. How can you tell me I'm not allowed to use muktzah on Shabbos? What do you mean you're not allowed to use muktzah on Shabbos? If it's usable, then it has the same status as an ochel, and it's not muktzah by definition, because the ishtamshus and the suitability and the availability of ishtamshus makes it into hakhana. Umeyati yesh lomar, the divrei harashba, let's go back to the rashba, heimle in yontif. The whole sugyan in Bamevet Likin about using it for firewood. Are you allowed to use a firewood or take Shivrei Kalim or this Eitzim Shanosh Shivrei Nail? All those discussions with Dafkan Yontif. And that's where the Rashba says that there's a problem of using this egg on Yontif to support your bed because you're having Hanah from the egg, which is an Isra Anomina Mukta, even though it's not Shal Kilui. Masha Enkin Rashi. Our Rashi about sitting on stones, and Rashi says that you're allowed to sit on stones. And we ask the question, Rabbi Kivega's question, what's the difference between sitting on stones or sitting the bed on the egg? The answer is that Rashi's talking about Shabbos. And with regard to Shabbos, you're allowed to sit on a stone because you're using the stone. And if you're using the stone, that's not an Isur Mukta. But Enochinami, if you want to sit on a stone on Yontif, is us. So Rabosei, the reason why I wanted to learn this piece with you today, as we end the Zman, is mamish for these last few words. Because this is wild. Tap anyone on the street who's a big Talmud Chacham and ask him the following question. Two questions. Am I allowed to sit on a stone on Shabbos? Then ask him, am I allowed to sit on a stone on Yontif? And if he's a big Talmud Chacham, he's going to tell you the following. Of course you're allowed to sit on a stone on Shabbos, if you're not moving the stone. Because Rashi says in Shabbos Daf Kuf Chav Hei Amid Beis, that Rebbe instructed his Talmidim to organize the stones in such a way that on Shabbos they wouldn't have to move them, and therefore they're allowed to sit on the stone. And then ask him, are you allowed to sit on a stone on Yontif? He said, for sure. If you're allowed to sit on a stone on Shabbos, Kolshkein v'kavachomer, I'm allowed to sit on a stone on Yontif. And then tell him to Ayin Harei Kedem Amud Reish Sabach. And he says, no, on Yontif it's awesome, because the Rashba says that setting up a bed in order to balance it over a muktzah, an egg, is awesome. So first we said a whole shtickel Torah because it's like Dumya Dachila, it's swallowed up by the bed. Now we're saying something totally different. That Ochlim need Hachana. And if you don't have Hachana, then the Ochel is Muktzah. And if it's Muktzah, it's also Bishimush. You're not allowed to have any benefit from Muktzah. But that's only on Yontif. Why? Because Ein HaKol Mukhan Eitzel Yontif. Yontif requires Hachana. But we pass like Rav Shimon in Shabbos, that Hakol Muchan Eitzel Shabbos. And if it's Muchan, then it has a function, and it's not Mukta, and then there's no Isurish Tamshis. Okay then? We'll stop here. Harbe Yosef Mashikosim Khan. There's still a lot to do. Okay.